Okay, JC, I'm gonna describe a movie plot to you, and you tell me what movie I'm talking about, okay?
Okay, I got
Okay,
this.
so you got this, you got this. So there's an Irish gangster. He's a mob boss, and he's in real tight with his assassin. They're like family, but then they have a falling out, and then the assassin and his son have to go on the run. So the mobster sends a balding hitman after them, and the whole time, our assassin is trying to keep his son from killing anybody because he doesn't want him to follow in his footsteps.
Oh yeah, it's totally Road to Perdition.
Oh crap, it is. Well, let's also run all night. We are the unusual suspects. We have a very particular set of skills that include drinking, watching movies, and yammering about movies.
See, now you need to lose your accent all of a sudden.
Yeah, I need to like lose it and then find it again, and then lose it and then find it again. I am Brian.
Elliot!
JC.
And this is a very special Inside the Locker edition of Highly Suspect Reviews.
We're taking over!
We're taking over. Which is actually fitting because at one point in this movie, there's a lot of hockey going on in this movie. Like, the Devils and the Rangers game is kind of like a centerpiece throughout the whole
Well,
plot.
and it's like a nice symbol. It's like some they do some nice symbolism throughout the entire thing. How it's a friend, it was a friendly sort of situation, but that game's over. And there's a scene in the middle of the movie where it's like that game's over, and then everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
I was getting a weird vibe with the hockey, and I was half expecting a weird, creepy side plot to just pop out of nowhere, like in Running Scared.
See, and I like Running Scared, and one of the
Oh
reasons I
yeah.
was really looking forward to this is because I really like one of my weaknesses, one of my guiltiest of guilty pleasures is movies that take place over one night.
Yeah,
Not
those are great.
necessarily in real time,
Yeah.
but just movies like Running Scared, I think is great, and it's actually a legitimately good Paul Walker movie, which there's like a handful of.
Ding, ding, ding. Special phrase nobody has said in 5 weeks.
That's true. That's very true. But
as Brian turns my mic down.
Well, it's a very powerful mic. It's a very powerful mic.
It's
You don't know me, but I am a very powerful
a
microphone.
Mike Belgium pancake.
It is a Mike pancake. What the hell was I saying? Oh yeah, so like
Sorry.
After Hours and Running Scared and like all these movies that are all about one night and the series of things that happen within that night. So I was really looking forward to this. Now, believe it or not, there is more plot to this movie than just it takes place over the course of a night. Liam Neeson plays Jimmy Conlon, who is a very washed up, very much alcoholic former assassin for the Irish mob.
To be fair, you can say his name is Jimmy Conlon, but he plays Liam Neeson is a Boston gangster.
He's well, in
Or a New
Texas,
York
yeah.
gangster.
I thought it was Boston too. Maybe it's
Yeah,
because
the
I'm
accent's a
racist.
little bit weird.
No, maybe it's because I'm racist. I see Irish mob. I think Boston. I don't know. Maybe that's an
Well, I think that you've
association.
just seen a bunch of Marky Mark movies.
That could be it
Yeah.
too. That could be it too. Plus, Ed Harris has actually played Irish gangsters in a movie called
Yeah.
State of Grace. If you ever have a chance to check that out. So he's a former assassin for them. Now he's just kind of. You know, he's kind of their errand boy. At the beginning of the movie, there's this great scene where they force him to play Santa Claus, which is like why this movie jumped up 1,000 points in my estimation. Seeing Liam Neeson actually do Santa Claus was like it was like a sketch from Extras.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a real
Or the
thing.
state.
Or the state, yeah. And yet it was happening in front of us at
Well,
the
it
same
reminded
time.
me of Ghostbusters 2, the scene where they're like they're being He-Man in the
Yes.
that's what it sort of
He-Man.
breaks up the movie and you're like, okay, they know what they're doing. They're gonna try to pull your heartstrings, but they're not gonna go too hard at it.
And you know what happens if you end up on Liam Neeson's naughty list? I'm just saying, you get a lump of coal shoved right into your temple until you're dead. That's how it works.
Yeah.
But so there's a situation that comes up where the son of the local mob boss, played by Ed Harris, the son is played by Boyd Holbrook,
What has he
who
been in?
I don't know. He looked very familiar to
Yeah.
me. And at first, I thought both characters were played by Joel Kinnaman at first. So I was like, wait, is that also
Yeah.
Joel Kinnaman? Because he was in Liam Neeson's last movie, A Walk Among the Tombstones.
Oh, I hadn't seen that either.
Oh,
But
yeah.
yeah, you should check that
I
out.
heard it was good.
He's also in Gone Girl, so I think he's just been.
That's why I recognize him. I just saw that.
Which means he's been in both the most recent David Fincher movie and the most recent Liam Neeson movie that feels like a David Fincher movie. So that's probably
It
why
is
he.
shot like one.
It is, yeah, definitely. I'm talking about Walk Among the Tombstones.
Oh, Walk Among the Tombstones.
Which is totally like a David Fincher movie. This, on the other hand, it does strive for levels of gritty, but it doesn't even get as gritty as something like Running Scared, which, again, is a movie I think is an apt comparison. But, you know, so the situation comes up where the son of the mob boss is a total douchebag, which, by the way, is there, like, some special school where the sons of every gangster go to learn how to be total asshats?
It's, I don't know, I think it's, if you, because you're either straight and a douchebag, or you're gay and you just, like, want nothing to do with the life your father had, and
yeah.
In which case you turn out to be an okay kid, you're just, you know, you're gay.
Oh, yeah, no, that's so much better. It's so much better to be gay than to be straight if you're the son of a mob boss, and that's, because the whole time I'm watching this, I'm thinking about Road to Perdition, because there's a lot of plot elements that are similar, yeah. And then I'm thinking about John Wick, because it's just like, why is it in all of these movies you kind of like the mob boss, but the mob boss's kid is always a weaseling little goon?
Yeah. Because the mob boss knows that there are rules to the way you do this. Like, it's sort of the same thing you see in society. You got, you know, the person who came up and made it, they know what it took to make it. All of the people, like the son, it's usually the grandson, not the son.
Mm-hmm.
But the son, all he sees is the money, and he sees that he doesn't get the same respect as his father, but he doesn't get how much work had to be done to get there. So he takes shortcuts. Like in this movie, you know, Ed Harris's character knows there are rules, there are ways you do things. The other guy, the son's like, no, this is the way I'm going to do it. And it just, that's what makes the movie. Like, it just goes off a deep end. Just if he had just, you know, listened to the guy who knew what he was doing,
but they never do. Shorter movie. They never do. And plus cocaine. Cocaine always seems to be a big part of
it. My thing is, like, it's something you always see in movies is like, they have this deal, and like, we've given you money in advance.
Yeah.
Why do you go spend the money? Hold on to it for a second.
Don't snort all the money as soon as the Albanians give it to you. I think that's a lesson we can all take away from this Tripolia. Movie. From Tripolia. Again, with the Albanians and Liam Neeson, what is going on? But yeah, so there's a situation where it becomes very advantageous for the son of the mob boss to kill Liam Neeson's son, who's not involved in the rackets whatsoever, but just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But wouldn't you know it, just before our douchebag little son can kill Liam Neeson's kid, Liam Neeson kills him. Now, I'm not spoiling anything, because literally, that's in every single trailer. That's the setup of the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's not a spoiler at all.
Yeah, you don't have a movie without that.
Now, what I found most interesting about this movie, what I liked most about it, and what is kind of downplayed in the trailers, the trailer makes it look like there is always just a burning, broad stroke animosity between Ed Harris and Liam Neeson. And the movie actually handles their relationship really well. It establishes that they have been friends their entire lives. And this is actually a really complicated, difficult situation for both of them, because Ed Harris feels a loyalty to his family. Like, I've got to kill you and I've got to kill your son. But at the same time, he does legitimately love Liam Neeson, you know?
I see what you're saying, but for me, they never really fully explained. There was never a scene that really said, why do you have to kill the son? Like, I understand killing Liam Neeson. I get that. You're going to kill your best friend. That should be enough. They need to tell me. I just wanted them to tell me a little bit more about that motivation, extra step.
I think that scene is there. I think that's the scene in the restaurant I want to look in your eyes. And it follows a scene where Ed Harris has to tell his wife that their son is dead. And that moment is pretty intense. And I can kind of understand getting from that point A to point B being like, I don't just want to get revenge on you. I want you to feel what you've made me feel.
I feel like the scene in which you really realize how close they are. Well, no, not the restaurant. I feel like that laid the foundation of their friendship pretty well.
No, but yeah. I see what you're saying. Like that actually does fall from point A to point B. But they do such a great job of establishing just how close they are that I needed just a little bit more about why he couldn't just say, I should kill you and your son, but in recognition, I'm just going to kill you.
I don't know. I didn't have that problem. I felt like they did a decent job establishing that. And again, like, what I find so interesting about it is that they do develop this complicated relationship between these adversaries. So it's not just, you know, our lovable hero and mustache twirling villain. Like, there's a layer of there's a depth there between those two, and I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. I also really enjoyed Kinnaman with his own family. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very natural. I thought it worked really well. It was very, you could feel a lot of empathy for him. The only relationship in this movie that I don't buy is Neeson and Kinnaman, Because for some reason, when Kinnaman is in a scene with Neeson, especially early in the movie, he falls back on this, like, he rests on this laurel of, like, I'm just defiant because you were never there, man. It's like, okay, that is so tired. Yeah. That is so cliche. And especially the catch 22 of being like, you never come around. That's why you don't know your granddaughters. And Liam Neeson's like, you don't want me around. It goes, yeah, because you were never there when I was a kid. It's like, dude, okay, which is it? Yeah. I'm so tired of that. I'm so tired of that double standard.
I mean, they should have stuck to more, you're a murderer, that's why I don't want you around.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
you weren't there.
Which would have led, interestingly, into what Liam Neeson says about, like, I wasn't there because I'm a murderer.
Yeah,
I
was like, yeah, and the movie did a weird thing in which it was alluding to all of these things in the past, and it laid the foundation pretty well. You didn't feel like you needed a flashback to see it. And then it chooses one kind of weird, ambiguous, really kind of inconsequential moment to go back to a flashback to show you. And it's like, if you're going to do a flashback...
We didn't need to see that necessarily.
Yeah, we didn't need to see that one.
I see what you're saying. I feel like the filmmakers were concerned that you were getting so... At that point in the movie, you were getting so sympathetic towards Neeson. I feel like they wanted to remind you he's a bad dude.
No. He's not saying the story element was unnecessary. Oh. But literally seeing it, like flashing back and visually, like you don't, it, you can tell us that happened. We don't need to see it happen.
And I didn't really feel that way until towards the end when the police officer is looking at an old newspaper and is talking about how he, you know, they call him the gravedigger. The gravedigger walks.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that would have been a cool flashback to see little Joel Kinnaman, like watching his dad, like come out of a courtroom.
Yeah. That would have been have a little bit more significance to it.
Yeah, you're right. If you're going to do a flashback, you don't want to, don't flashback on that, flashback on him at his high.
Yeah.
He's done this and he's rich and everything's great, but you know, I know we're picking apart is the wrong word. We're analyzing the movie, but I want to just say how much I liked about it.
Oh yeah.
It was gritty in the way that is at least modern, as gritty as modern can get. Mm-hmm. Because New York is sort of Disney-fied now. And I think that's a good thing because the crime rates aren't insane, but gritty, like they sit in on a rainy night. It's just sort of nasty and
It's got the film noir touches, for sure.
But it doesn't go overboard. It doesn't really try to cram it down your throat. But you definitely see the other side of New York from what you see in, like, romantic comedies.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bright. There's not a bunch of farmers markets everywhere. You don't see Patrick Dempsey anywhere.
I'm sorry. Liam Neeson, like, shooting people and tearing up a farmers market? That's got to be in the next movie.
It's probably happened in one of his
movies. It probably has. We got to go back and look. But yeah, no, there are some interesting set pieces here. There are some, and there are moments of legitimate tension where, you know, the things, everything is closing in on them and you do want them to get away and you kind of have, you know, things coming from all sides. One of them being Vincent D'Onofrio playing this detective who for years has been trying to put Liam Neeson in jail. 35 years and has never been able to do it. So there's a contentious relationship between the two of them and he's closing in and the mob's closing in. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of tension there. But my biggest problem with the movie, honestly, is that it's called Run All Night, and at a certain point in the movie, it seems like the urgency leaves.
I can see
it seems like the pace slows to a limp, and it becomes limp all night. And, you know, it's just like, it's not moving anymore. I'm like, this movie should be flying.
Mm-hmm.
We should be flying through this movie. And I kept finding myself toward the end, especially in the third act, checking my watch. I was just like, I know you have to, it's got one of those bookend things where it's like, I know you have to get back to the point where we started, very Tarantino.
Yeah.
But maybe don't start the movie there.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem with the movie, because I forgot about it through the movie, luckily. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you see that beginning, and I know it's a storytelling device, but if you're going to have a movie this tense, there are certain things they do that just take away all the tension.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where person A sees something, and you know that's going to relate to something later. So you know through that entire scene that nobody is going to die there.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And it just sort of takes all the tension out of the scene. So I mean,
that's a good point. Yeah, because you know that, you know, if something is going to happen to this character, it's not going to happen until the very end because we have to get back to that point.
There's no reason you show that one. It's like you don't show me the gun unless you're going to use it and you haven't used it yet, and that's the only person that knows about it. So therefore, they're going to be alive.
Yeah.
So they went for a lot of these storytelling devices, I feel like, at the expense of the movie.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, definitely.
If it could have been a lot tenser without that opening scene and then without a lot of these little show me the gun moments, because there's a very tense scene in this movie that I was wondering if they had faked us out.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, goes and you're fine, but it could have been a lot better.
I agree. And the thing is, I feel like part of the problem is the movie can't decide if it wants to be a gritty thriller or if it wants to be a straight up action movie
or a drama
But in the action sequences, like there's a lot of interesting choices made with cinematography in this movie. Some of them really work and some of them really don't.
Yeah.
And in some of the fight sequences, I feel like choices made in cinematography, it's not just the quick cuts, because I know that is a problem that plagues a lot of contemporary action films. It's not to that level. Like, there are a lot of quick cuts, but it's not quite as bad as, you know, like the Bourne sequels or, you know, like Brooke Mansions, which is a movie, you know, that came out recently, which is just like cut, like, and where you get motion sickness. It's not quite that, but there are choices made in shot composition.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds like I'm being really picky, but when you're talking about a chase sequence when two people are running after each other, if you don't frame things correctly, I don't know what the hell's going on. It's a basic tenet of action filmmaking.
Yeah. It does stuff like that through the entire movie where there's a very pivotal scene where two characters are trapped inside of a room, and they don't even show us how they left.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll go along with it because that's this type of movie, but at least, like, what I was hoping they were going to do is, like, go back, do a callback to The Rock, and they escape through the sewer or something, because they were in a bathroom.
Yeah.
I thought that'd been really cute, because you're with Ed Harris, but they do that all the time. Like, they don't frame things right, and I feel like this isn't nitpicking, because they open the door to this, because they want to use these shots. You should know how to use them.
Yeah.
You should know how to use all of them.
Well, I mean, if you don't have any idea of the geography of the scene, how can you be impressed by the fighting? How can you be impressed by the gunplay if nothing is centered? Nothing. Like, for example, like, there's a scene where the two guys are running, and, like, all of a sudden a guy jumps a fence, but the camera, like, pans up to the corner of a building, and I'm like, what? Is there a bat in there that you're intrigued by? What are we looking at?
It's especially weird because this director, just looking it up, this is the first time he's worked with this specific cinematographer. And so,
really?
It doesn't look like... This director is the guy behind Nonstop, House of Wax, which is, I know, a movie that you like.
I love House of Wax.
House of Wax is good.
Yeah, it's a...
And I liked Unknown. Unknown is a Liam...
And yeah, he did
this
Unknown.
This is the third time he's worked with Liam Neeson. And to me, it's like, Unknown is probably their best collaboration. This is a close second. And then, of course, Nonstop, which is just...
Nonstop was decent.
Nonstop, to me, is just like the epitome of... joke movies. It's like it's the kind of movie I would expect to see on like Key and Peele, where they're like, you know, let's pitch a movie for Liam Neeson's. Yeah. How about he's on an airplane and someone's trying to kill him and he don't know who it is? Liam Neeson's, yo! Like, it's just like, it's well, just
I
stupid.
Mean, I agree with you. I feel like the reason we've been getting a lot of these, like, Liam Neeson is Taken, like, what, 6 years ago now? 5 years ago? Taken came out.
It's
like,
been several, yeah.
Liam Neeson can sell these movies that otherwise would have Cuba Gooding Jr. in them and it would be in the bargain bin at HEB.
And they would be direct to video.
Yeah. I mean, like, this would have been, I don't know who you get to star in this that people are actually going to come see besides Denzel Washington or Liam Neeson.
Yeah. And I think part of the problem of the identity crisis here is that, as the drama, as you mentioned, is, you know,
they don't sell it
enough. I don't need these two to patch up their differences and get along for this movie to work for me.
Yeah.
And yet they spend so much of the movie trying to do that, that it feels like the world's most grandiose bottle episode of a TV show.
No, and I agree. And I feel like they get themselves into that corner. I feel like they wrote themselves into that corner because if you have Liam Neeson's character and you really want him to be at least a former bad guy, he's not reformed, but he used to be a bad guy. He's just not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody can sympathize with him because when it comes down to it, you got two scumbags killing each other.
Yeah.
You need the son there who's a complete innocent so that the audience wants to root for you. But if you're going to do that, you got to know what to do with that character and what to do with that interaction. And I feel like you're right. Like, they just sort of say, well, they're going to be patching it up. No, just maybe subtly, but don't have like a straight up scene where they're like, you're never around. Well, I was never around because you were a murderer. It's like, well, come on, man. You don't have to say that shit outright.
It's like, you do know you're being chased, right?
Yeah.
Like this is part of the problem is that if this movie was done the way it should have been, where it was sleek and fast paced, they wouldn't have had time for that bullshit.
Right.
There would have been just no time. They literally would have been like, no, I'm sorry. We have to keep moving. We have to keep moving.
If you have that much of a ticking clock, you're right. Like, it should have been like, every time, like, they get from one set piece, so like, oh, next set piece.
Yeah.
Next set piece.
Yeah.
Next set piece, and you're done.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this movie was 2 hours, and it should have been about 1:30.
Yeah. Yeah, it's way too long. I mean, especially, again, for a movie called Run All Night.
But to be fair, like, just to be fair, this is much better than anything like The Getaway.
Oh, absolutely.
This is miles better.
No, and it's and a lot of that comes from Liam Neeson, a lot of that comes from Ed Harris, and a lot of that comes from... you know, it is overall a setup that we can buy and we can get behind. Mm-hmm. But again, I just think there are all these little things that, like, if they had just tweaked and worked a little bit harder on, this could have been something really great. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm doubly, you know what? Let's just go to final thoughts. Let's wrap this up. And the things I was going to say, I'll just put it in my final thoughts. So JC, what are your final thoughts on Run All Night?
I mean, wasn't expecting a ton. Would have liked, it's weird to say, I would have liked for this to be a little dumber and sillier.
I can see that.
Just because it's what it seemed like I was getting, and I was really kind of amped for that. And while this was good, whenever your expectations are kind of shifted, it's just kind of a weird jolt to the system. The chase scenes I thought were good. A lot of I couldn't really fully get into it because a lot of the fight scenes that the camera work you're talking about is just, it's too close. You can't really see what's happening, and I hate that because there are too many directors out there who know how to film fight scenes to just, yep, you know.
There's no excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kinnaman was great. I'm kind of hit or miss on him. I have been his whole career, and he's slowly kind of turning me around. I don't think he should have a shaved head is the issue.
It's a little weird.
Dude is weird looking.
The biggest problem with the movie, folks.
A problem LeBron James shares.
Yeah. A good popcorn flick. If I'm in the mood for something Liam Neeson, I'm a little taken out. Or a little tookened out.
Straight tookened out.
This is not a bad one to pop in. Plus, I thought it was a really cool Ed Harris, and seeing Ed Harris, he's not aging very well, but seeing him, like, being, you know, cool Ed Harris again is always a welcome surprise. I would give it a really solid 6.5 out of 10 assassins.
All right, Elliot?
It's a nice creed, sir. I mean, this is a decent movie. It's very workmanlike.
Mm-hmm.
It knows exactly. I feel like whoever wrote this used a paint by number script. It was like, here's what we need to do. He's the remorseless, the best person they have in their crew. They're going to butt heads. There's nothing that's going to happen in this movie that you're not going to see coming. This is not a movie that you rush out to the theater to see. There's no reason to go see this in the theater. Absolutely at all. This is a great movie for you to wait about a year or a year and a half until it comes on Netflix or HBO or something, and it's like a rainy Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rainy Sunday movie.
Yep.
This is not a rush out to the movie, rush out to the theater to see it. So just wait. It's a solid 6 Glocks out of 10.
All right. I think two things are happening here. I think JC's right. I think it is a decent popcorn flick, but I think the problem is I'm a little bit biased because the last Liam Neeson movie I saw was Walk Among the Tombstones, which was so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really intense, very well-crafted dark thriller, and really a step above the things that we have been seeing from Liam Neeson of late. Now, to be fair, I haven't seen Taken 3, so that may have, if I had seen Taken 3 before this, that may have knocked my expectations back down to where they should be, and then I would have enjoyed this more. But I think it's decent. I think decent's the perfect word for it. It's a very, it does everything it wants to do very adequately.
Yeah, it gets a B.
Exactly. It's I don't know. I think I would be more in the C range. It's kind of an average.
C plus.
Yeah, I think since I should probably assign that numeric equivalent because we don't use the age.
A 79.
Right? 79 out of 10. I'm just fucking everything up right
Sorry,
now.
Sorry, dude.
But no, I think there's a lot about this that works, and there are things that are just not tightened up. And if they had been, this could have been something really great. And because of all that, I think I'm going to give this movie, I think I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 ticking clocks.
Hmm.
But here's the big question, guys, the sports ball enthusiasts in the room. If we're looking at the hockey game in the middle of the movie as a metaphor, is Ed Harris the New Jersey Devil and Liam Neeson is the New York Ranger, or vice versa?
I mean, I would say Liam Neeson's the devil.
Is he? But is he the New Jersey Devil you know, or the New Jersey Devil you're more comfortable with?
I thought he was the devil in the blue dress.